Welcome back to the deep dive. Have you ever, talked to one of these large language models, typed in exactly what you thought you wanted, and got back? Well, something else entirely.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, you're definitely not alone.
Yeah.
It feels like it should be simple, right? But getting results that are actually useful and consistent, it often feels like speaking a totally different language.
It really does.
So today we're diving deep into this white paper. It's called prompting.pdf. We're going to try and crack that code.
Okay.
Our mission here is to unpack this source, pull out the really core ideas, and give you the techniques you need to, get better at talking to LLMs.
To become a more effective communicator, yeah, that's the key, isn't it? It feels a bit like typing in a search bar, maybe, but it's just so much more nuanced.
Right.
And as this paper makes really clear, crafting a truly effective prompt, what we call prompt engineering, it's complex, it's iterative.
Iterative, yeah. Keep trying.
Exactly. It's not just the words you choose. It's about understanding the model itself, its settings, specific ways to structure your request. If the prompt isn't well engineered, you often get ambiguity, maybe factual errors, or just unhelpful stuff.
Right, because fundamentally, an LLM is like this incredibly sophisticated prediction engine, right? It looks at the text, you give it your prompt, and it predicts the most likely next word or token based on just this massive amount of text it learned from.
That training data, yeah.
So prompt engineering is really the art, maybe the science, of designing that input to sort of guide the model's prediction process to get it to predict what you actually want.
Yeah, think of it like guiding a super intelligent friend who can sometimes be a bit absent-minded.
Okay, I like that analogy.
You need to be precise. You've got to give context. Sometimes you even need to show them examples, like, here's the kind of thing I'm looking for.
Okay, so let's unpack the layers here. The paper points out it's not just the text you type in. There's this whole, control panel behind the scenes.
Absolutely. These model configurations, they are just as important as the prompt text for shaping what comes out. One really basic setting is just the output length.
Limiting the maximum number of tokens.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just sets an upper limit on how long the response can be, useful for, managing compute costs or time, keeping things within a certain boundary.
Makes sense.
But the paper notes something crucial. Making the maximum length shorter doesn't force the model to be more concise. It just cuts it off.
It just stops mid-thought, potentially.
Exactly. And that really matters for certain techniques like React, which we'll probably get into, where you need the model to stop after it finishes a specific sequence of actions.
Got it. Okay. And then there are the sampling controls. This is where you influence the models like creativity or randomness.
Precisely. Yeah. LLMs don't just pick one next word. They assign probabilities to thousands of possible words. Sampling is how the model actually selects the next word based on those probabilities.
Okay.
And the three main controls the paper talks about are temperature, top K, and top P.
All right, let's start with temperature. What's the idea there?
Temperature basically controls how bold the model is when it picks the next token. A low temperature, like zero, that's often called greedy decoding.
Greedy. Okay.
It means the model always picks the single most probable token. It's deterministic, very factual, great if you need the same precise answer every single time.
Right.
A higher temperature makes the model more adventurous, let's say. It still looks at probabilities, but it's more willing to pick a less probable token. That leads to more diverse, creative, sometimes unexpected results.
So more out there answers, potentially.
Could be. The paper mentions an analogy related to how the model scores potential next words. Low temperature sharpens the score differences, making the top choice really stand out. High temperature flattens those differences, making lots of options seem kind of equally plausible.
Interesting. And top K, how's that different?
Top K just limits the choices to only the K most probable token. So if K is, say, 10, it only considers the top 10 most likely next words. If K is 1, well, that's the same as temperature 0, just the single most probable token. So a low K restricts choices, makes it more factual. A higher K opens up the pool, allows for more variety.
Gotcha. And top P nucleus sampling.
Top P is slightly different again. It looks at tokens in order of probability, right? And it selects from the smallest group of the most probable tokens whose probabilities add up to a certain threshold, P.
Okay, cumulative probability.
Exactly. So if P is, say, 0.9, it looks at the top tokens as their probabilities, and once that sum hits 90%, it only considers those tokens for the next step. It can be a bit more dynamic than top K sometimes, because the number of tokens it considers can change step by step.
Okay, so how do these all work together, if I set all three?
Yeah, good question. The source explains that typically top K and top P act first. They filter the pool of possible tokens. Then temperature is applied for sampling from that filtered group.
Okay, so filter then sample.
Right. But extreme settings can kind of override others. If your temperature is zero or your top K is one, you're always just picking the single most probable token anyway, so the other settings don't really matter for that step.
That clarifies it. And the paper actually gives some starting points, right, depending on what you want.
Yeah, they suggest... For sort of coherent but maybe creative output, try temperature around 0.2, top P 0.95, and top K maybe 30.
Okay.
For max creativity, crank them up, temperature 0.9, top P 0.99, top K 40.
Wow. Okay. High settings.
Yeah. And for less creativity, more factual precision, lower them down, temperature 0.1, top P 0.9, top K 20.
Makes sense.
And this is critical. For tasks where there's only one right answer, like, say, a math problem, always set temperature to zero. You don't want creativity there.
Definitely not. Precision over poetry for math problems.
Got it.
Yeah.
And the caution is, giving the model more freedom with those higher settings, it can sometimes lead to less relevant text, right? It might wander off.
Exactly. It's always a balancing act, you know, between letting it explore and keeping it focused on the task. All right, so that's the control panel, the settings. Now let's get into how the specific techniques for structuring the prompt text itself.
Right. These techniques kind of leverage how the model was trained, how it works internally to guide it towards better outputs. The simplest one, and often the least effective for anything complex, is just general prompting, or zero shot.
Zero shot, meaning just give it the task description, no examples at all.
Precisely. Yeah. The paper uses this example of classifying a movie review. Positive, neutral, or negative. You just give it the review text and the instruction, classify this.
Okay.
But the example review is tricky. It calls the movie disturbing, but also a masterpiece. Without any guidance, the model got it wrong. It said positive. It didn't know how to handle that nuance.
Oh, I've definitely seen that happen.
Yeah.
That's where few-shot prompting comes in, right?
Yeah.
Giving it examples.
Yes. And this is often the single most impactful thing you can do. You provide one example that's one shot, or several examples few-shot showing the input and the exact kind of output you want. Format, style, everything.
It's like teaching by showing.
Exactly. It's a really powerful teaching tool for the model. It shows the specific pattern you want it to imitate.
And the paper suggests, what, 3 to 5 examples maybe as a starting point?
Right. But they also say it really varies. Depends on how complex the task is and, crucially, the quality of your examples. They have to be relevant, diverse, high quality, accurate. Even one small error in an example can send the model way off track.
Okay. So garbage in, garbage out, even for the examples.
Pretty much. Including edge cases in your examples is also really helpful for getting the model to generalize better. The paper shows this great example of using few-shot to get the model to parse pizza orders into structured JSON format. The examples clearly teach that desired structure.
That's a clear win for getting structured data out.
Yeah.
Okay, the source also mentions system, contextual, and role prompting. These sound kind of related, like setting the scene for the AI. What's the difference?
Yeah, they definitely overlap, but you can think of them as guiding the AI's purpose from slightly different angles. System prompting sets the overall sort of big picture identity or rules, usually at the start of a whole interaction.
And its job description.
Kind of, yeah. Or its core operating principles. It could define the persona, safety rules, or maybe strict output formats like always reply in JSON. Contextual prompting is more about giving immediate specific background info just for the current task or query. It's more dynamic.
Okay.
And role prompting is a specific type of contextual prompt where you explicitly assign a character or persona for the AI to adopt. That really influences its tone and voice.
Okay, so system is the always on rules, like a reply in uppercase.
Exactly. The paper has examples like that, or enforcing JSON output. And that JSON thing is super useful for data extraction or, you know, plugging the LLM into other software. It forces structure, helps stop it from just making things up hallucinating that don't fit. And it's why you put rules like be respectful.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And contextual is the just for this task info.
Yes, the background needed right now. the paper has that example about asking for blog post ideas about retro 80s arcade games.
Right.
Providing the context, you are writing for a blog about retro 80s arcade video games. Make sure the suggestions are actually about, well, 80s arcade games, not just any video games.
Got it. And role prompting is literally telling it to act like someone.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Act as a travel guide. That's the example in the paper. It shapes the style, the tone. You can even add more flavor, like act as a humorous travel guide, and the output changes again.
That distinction helps. Now, step back prompting that sounds kind of counterintuitive. How does stepping back help you move forward?
Yeah, it's a neat idea. The core concept is, instead of asking your specific, maybe complex question directly, you first prompt the LLM to step back and answer a more general question related to the topic.
Okay.
Well, you take that general answer it gives you and you feed it back into your original prompt as extra context. The idea is that by making it think about the general principles or related themes first, the model activates broader, more relevant knowledge from its training, stuff it might not have accessed if you just went straight for the specifics.
Ah, so it primes the pump with relevant general knowledge first.
Exactly. It can lead to more nuanced, insightful, and accurate specific answers. The paper uses this example of generating a storyline for a first-person shooter game level, the direct prompt. Got a pretty generic story.
Okay.
But they first prompted the model to list engaging themes for FPS games. Then they took one of those themes, like an underwater research facility, and put that into the storyline prompt. The result, a much richer, more unique story.
That's clever. Guiding its internal thought process. Speaking of which, chain of thought, or COTY. That sounds important.
Oh, COTY is huge. It's a really powerful technique for improving reasoning, especially for tasks that need step-by-step logic. Think mathematical word problems. Instead of just asking for the final answer, you explicitly tell the model to generate the intermediate reasoning steps. You basically ask it to show its work.
Like literally telling it, let's think step-by-step.
That's often the magic phrase, yeah.
Yep.
The paper shows this really striking example, a math problem. Direct prompt, wrong answer. Add, let's think, step by step. The model spits out the whole calculation process, step by step, and gets the correct solution.
Wow.
The insight is, by forcing the model to sort of externalize its computation, to write it down, the reasoning process becomes more reliable and visible to us too.
So it's not that the model couldn't potentially figure it out silently, but asking it to show the steps makes it more likely to actually follow the logic correctly.
Exactly right. And the advantages are pretty significant. It's low effort to implement, just add that phrase. It works with lots of different models. It gives you interpretability. You can see where it went wrong if it does make a mistake. And it seems to improve robustness.
Any downsides?
The main one is just, well, more output. Generating all those extra steps means more tokens, which means higher cost and maybe takes a bit longer.
Okay, trade-offs. And the paper notes, COTY works even better combined with few shots.
Yes, absolutely. If you provide few shot examples that include the reasoning steps along with the input and the final output, that really helps the model learn how to apply COTY correctly to new problems. The paper also gives some best practices for COTY. Make sure the final answer comes after all the reasoning. Design the prompt so you can easily pull out just that final answer later. And importantly, for these kinds of deterministic reasoning tasks, set the temperature to zero. No creativity needed in the steps.
Got it. Building on COTY, there's something called self-consistency.
Right. Self-consistency takes that show your work idea and adds a bit of statistics to it. Instead of just generating one reasoning path with COTY,
you do it multiple times.
Exactly. You run the same COTY prompt multiple times, often with a higher temperature setting.
Oh, higher.
To encourage the model to explore slightly different reasoning paths each time. Then you look at all the final answers it produced across those different runs, and you choose the answer that shows up most often.
Like taking a vote among the different ways it tried to solve it.
Precisely. It can really improve accuracy and coherence, especially if the task is a bit ambiguous. The paper uses an email classification example where the tone is tricky. Different COTY runs might classify it differently, but running it, say, 10 times and seeing which classification comes up most often helps you get the most consistent, likely correct answer.
But that sounds computationally expensive.
Oh, it is. That's the trade-off, as the source notes. Running the prompt many times costs more.
And then tree of thoughts, that generalizes COTY even more.
Yeah, tree of thoughts, or TOTY, is more complex. COTY is like a linear chain of steps. TOTY allows the model to explore multiple reasoning paths at the same time, branching out like a tree. good for really complex problems needing exploration.
Okay, so COTE and its variations focus on internal reasoning. React sounds different, connects the model to the outside world.
Exactly. React stands for reason and act. This is a more advanced technique. Yeah. It combines that natural language reasoning we've been talking about with the ability to actually use external tools.
Tools like what? Search engines.
Search engines, databases, APIs, calculators, things like that. It mimics how we humans solve problems, right? We think about what we need. That's the reason part. Then we do something to get more info or perform a task. That's the act part.
So the model isn't just stuck with the knowledge it was trained on. It can get current info.
That's the power of it. It operates in this loop. It reasons about the task. It plans an action, like search the web for X. It executes that action using an external tool. It observes the result. Okay, the search found this page. It updates its reasoning based on that observation, forms a new plan, and keeps going until the task is done.
Wow. Can you give an example?
The paper has a great one. You ask it, how many kids do the Metallica band members have in total?
Okay, I definitely don't know that offhand.
Right. The model reasons it doesn't know either. It plans to search for each member. It executes search actions using a tool. It observes the results. Lars Ulrich has X kids. James Hetfield has Y kids, etc. It updates its reasoning, finds a number for each, then plans a final step to sum them up, and gives you the total.
That's incredible. It's like giving it research superpowers.
It really is. The paper does note, though, that implementing React usually requires writing some code to actually connect the LLM to those external tools. It's not just a simple prompt change.
Understood. Very powerful, though. What about making the prompt writing itself easier? Automatic prompt engineering, APE.
Yeah, APE is kind of meta. It's about using LLMs to help automate parts of the prompt engineering process itself. The main idea is you prompt a model to generate different variations of a prompt for a specific task you have.
So you ask an AI to help write better instructions for another AI.
Pretty much. Then you evaluate which of those generated prompts actually performs best, maybe using automated tests or just human judgment, and you use those or refine them further.
Huh. That could save a lot of time fiddling with wording.
It definitely can, and it might even find phrasing that works better than what a human would think of initially. The paper gives an example of prompting an LLM to generate like 10 different ways a customer might phrase an order for a t-shirt, which could then be used to make a chatbot understand orders better.
Interesting. Okay, shifting gears a bit, the paper also dives into prompting for code.
Right. LLMs can be surprisingly good coding assistants if you prompt them well.
Like actually writing code from scratch.
Yes. The paper shows an example where they ask it to write a bash script, that's a command line scripting thing, to rename files.
Okay.
And the generated code works. It's even commented. But, and this is absolutely critical, the paper stresses this hard, you must read and test any code an LLM generates thoroughly before you run it anywhere important.
Because it doesn't really understand code, it just predicts patterns.
Exactly. It doesn't understand execution context, security implications, things like that. It's just pattern matching from its training data. So review is essential.
Okay. And helping understand existing code.
Definitely useful. You can paste in some code and ask the LLM, hey, explain what this does, line by line, or just the overall concept. They show asking the model to explain the bash script it just wrote.
Code translation too, like bash to Python.
Yep, another strong use case. They show translating that bash renaming script into Python can be a massive time saver. But again, review, test, always.
And debugging. That sounds like a lifesaver for developers.
Oh, it can be incredibly helpful. The paper has this great example of a broken Python script. It has a name error, which means it tried to use a variable or function that doesn't exist.
Common error?
Very. So they give the model the broken code and the error message it produced and ask it to debug. The model correctly finds the exact line and suggests the fix changing to uppercase to the proper Python method, which is .upper.
Okay, finds the bug.
But then it goes further. It suggests a whole bunch of other improvements to make the code better, more robust, more readable. Things like handling file extensions properly, dealing with spaces and file names, which can cause issues, using f-strings for cleaner text formatting in Python, and even adding error handling using try.accept blocks. That's standard practice for catching errors gracefully in programming.
Wow, so that's not just debugging. That's like getting a mini code review with suggestions for improvement.
It really is. It shows the potential goes way beyond just fixing simple bugs or generating basic snippets.
That's really impressive. Okay, so we've covered configurations, the basic techniques like few shot, COT, step back, the advanced stuff like React, even automating prompt creation and coding help. The paper wraps all this up with some essential best practices. What are the key takeaways for someone wanting to become a prompt engineering pro?
Well, the paper really hammers home that prompt engineering is fundamentally iterative. You try something, you see what happens, you adjust, you try again, it's tinkering. And the number one most important best practice, according to the source, provide examples. Few-shot prompting. It's just the most powerful way to teach the model the exact style, format, accuracy you're aiming for.
Keep it simple, too. Design with simplicity.
Yes. Keep your prompts concise, clear, easy for the model to understand. Avoid really complex sentences or jargon if you don't need it. Use strong action verbs. Generate, analyze, summarize, extract, things like that. They show a kind of before and after travel guide prompt where the simpler one works better.
Be specific about the output you want.
Absolutely. Don't be vague. Use those system or contextual prompts we talked about to specify details. Like if you want a blog post, say how many paragraphs, the exact topic focus, the style, any key points that must be included. Don't just say, write about video game consoles. Say, write 3 paragraphs about 16-bit era consoles. Use a nostalgic tone, mention Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo.
Got it. And that interesting point about using instructions over constraints.
Yeah, this seems to be a growing area of research. The idea is that telling the model what to do, positive instructions, often works better than telling it what not to do constraints. Instructions give clearer direction. Constraints are still useful, especially for safety, don't use bad words, or very strict formatting, but having too many negative constraints can apparently confuse the model sometimes.
So better to say, only discuss these specific facts rather than don't list any game names.
Generally, yes. According to the paper, the positive instruction approach is often preferable.
Controlling max token length, we mentioned that with configuration settings.
Right, you can set it in the configuration, or sometimes you can just put it right in the prompt text, like summarize this document in under 100 words.
Using variables and prompts, that sounds useful for automation.
Hugely useful. It makes prompts dynamic and reusable. Essential if you're building an application that uses an LLM. The example they give is a prompt like, give me one interesting fact about city. You can then just plug in different city names into that city variable without rewriting a whole prompt structure.
Smart. Experimenting with input formats and writing styles.
Yeah, the paper encourages trying different ways to ask. Phrase it as a direct instruction, or maybe as a question. You could even adopt a persona yourself in the prompt. Different styles can sometimes trigger different kinds of responses or details from the model. They mentioned the Sega Dreamcast example. Different phrasing might bring out different historical facts. Oh, and for few-shot classification tasks, they say make sure you mix up the order of the output classes in your examples.
Less than.
It stops the model from just learning the sequence. If all your positive examples come first, then all negative, it might just learn the order, not the actual features of positive or negative sentiment. Mixing them up forces it to learn the real differences. They suggest starting with maybe 6 examples for classification testing.
Good tip. Staying current with model updates is also key, they say.
Essential. These models change constantly. A new version might behave differently. A prompt that worked perfectly last month might need a tweak this month to get the same results. That's where version control for prompts comes in handy.
And experimenting with output formats, especially structured ones like JSON.
Yes, they circle back to this. For tasks that aren't purely creative, like data extraction, summarizing specific points, classification, getting the output in a structured format like JSON or maybe XML is incredibly helpful. It forces structure, limits those hallucinations we talked about, makes it easy for other programs to read the output, and can even help with things like sorting the data.
Makes sense. And experimenting together if you're on a team.
Yeah, collaboration, different people try different things, brings more ideas, helps you find the best approach faster. More attempts mean more variance, more learning.
They also recap the CoFo best practices here.
Right, just quickly again, final answer after the reasoning steps, make sure you can easily extract just that answer, and temperature should be 0 for CoFi on deterministic tasks.
And finally, a point they really emphasize, document everything. Document your prompt attempts.
Yes, this is so important if you're doing this seriously. Keep detailed records. What was the prompt text? Which model version? What were the config settings? Temp, top K, top P, what output did you get? What was your goal? Did it work?
They even provide a template structure in the paper.
They do. Table 21 suggests fields like name, goal, model, configs, prompt text, the output, iteration number, result, pass-fail rating, and feedback or notes. You need this because, well, sometimes output varies slightly even with the same inputs. You will need to go back to old prompts, debug things, compare how prompts perform on new model versions, maybe pick up a project after a few months. Good documentation is your memory.
It lets you actually learn from the iteration.
Exactly. Yeah. They also recommend saving prompts properly, maybe in a version control system like Git if you're coding, and using automated tests if possible to check if your prompts still work broadly.
So it really is this continuous cycle. Craft, test, analyze the results, document it all, refine the prompt, experiment some more, and keep doing it as the models themselves change.
Precisely. It's definitely an ongoing journey, not a one-time fix.
Wow. Okay. That was a really comprehensive deep dive into prompt engineering, all coming out of this prompting.pdf white paper.
Mm-hmm.
We covered quite a lot, from the basic settings like temperature and output length to those core techniques like few shot examples, the structural stuff like system and role prompting, the reasoning boosters like CoT and step back, even advanced methods like React using external tools.
And automating prompt creation with APE plus the coding applications.
Right. And all those crucial best practices, especially the documentation part.
It really does show that prompt engineering isn't just, you know, a simple trick. It's becoming a real discipline. Mm. And mastering these techniques, that's the key to unlocking what these LLMs can really do to getting consistently useful, reliable results for whatever you're trying to achieve.
It absolutely is. And it's clearly an exciting field that's moving fast. So here's a final thought to leave you with. Now that you know techniques like Chain of Thought and React exist, and you understand how they can combine these step-by-step reasoning processes with the power to use external tools,
mm-hmm.
What complex problem, maybe something you thought was impossible before, could you imagine tackling with an LLM now?
Definitely something to ponder as you start engineering those next prompts.